It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning going to keep one downfield. Pass the defense is Cruz, who's got it at the 20. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 70 yards. Salsa time in Big D. Victor Cruz with another.
Play fake. Freeman back to throw. Under pressure. Heaves it downfield. Intercepted by Rowe at the 5. Runs left to the 15. Cuts right back to the 20. Looking for a block up to the 30. And drag down there.
Manning takes the snap. Back to throw. Sidearms one left sideline. And it's caught for the touchdown by Reuben Randall.
Golzine takes the snap. Pass
intercepted as he threw it right. Picked off by a jumping Jason Pierre-Paul. And he runs it in for the touchdown. And finally, Carl, you can say you're down with JPP, the 28-yard TD.
Now, here's your host, John Schmelk.
And Paul Dottino and Lance Meadow. Good morning, everybody. The Giants preseason is in the books, 5-0 for the New York Football Giants. And now things begin to get interesting. The regular season comes your way in about 10 days. But before that, the Giants have to take their roster down from 75 players all the way down to 53. And that's what we'll talk about this morning on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Well, taking your calls, we'll get to them quickly at 201-939-4513. If you call in and you can't get through, if it keeps ringing, just keep calling in. We will get to you guys as soon as possible. Lance, Paul, don't want to talk too much about the game last night in terms of wins and losses. We know the first-team offense, again, struggled. It's a story we've talked about all summer long, so I don't think we need to talk a ton about it again. But I do want to touch quickly on some of the guys that could have affected their prospects of making this roster. And let's start with some of the guys that might have helped themselves. And in that way, I want to look at Bennett Jackson, I want to look at Israel Adonijé, and I want to look at Larry Donnell. Paul, let's start with you.
Well, you know, it's clear to me that from the very get-go, the Giants had determined that Donnell was the tight end who had the most receiving skills of that group coming into training camp. And despite the fact that he had been very inconsistent and had not really shown much as a blocker, they never really got off the fact that if he had to make a play in the passing game, he could do it. And I think he showed that once again last night. So good for him. I think it gives him an opportunity to at least force the Giants to give him a second look, whether or not he actually sticks. I still think that's kind of iffy. I think he will, but I wouldn't be shocked if he doesn't. Adonijé, he's a pro's pro. And there's really not much you can say about him. He plays special teams, plays inside, plays outside along the defensive line. He's got a terrific motor, without question. And for a guy who's been in the league for more than a decade, he really knows how to hustle his butt off. And coach loves that. So you know he's in good shape. Two sacks or not, I think Adonijé was going to make it. And the other guy you mentioned was?
The third guy I mentioned was Bennett Jackson.
Bennett Jackson.
There.
Who clearly, when Charles James got ejected the other day from this roster, increased his chances of making the team. Plays on specials, but more importantly for the Giants, he's a 6-foot corner who's got some skills, and I thought he did a pretty good job last night.
And Lance, then the guys that maybe hurt themselves a little bit, and you know, John Connor helping himself by default because Henry Hinoski injures the same shoulder that he fractured last season. That's number one. Number two, Adrian Robinson fumbling the football, and then two guys in the return game muffing punts, Preston Parker and Michael Cox.
And Preston Parker has a golden opportunity here considering that a lot of the other receivers haven't necessarily stood out, but he's going to have to make an impact on special teams, and that's the one thing you can't do. You can't all of a sudden have some issues in the ball security department when your number's called in the preseason. I don't know how much it's going to hurt personally. I think they're going to keep six wide receivers, and I think Preston Parker is a member of that six because you have to remember, Odell Beckham Jr. is still not healthy. Trindon Holliday has yet to get on the field. Who's the punt returner? I mean, if you had to get down and dirty and look at who is the guy to step up, to me it all calls back to Preston Parker.
Who was the punt returner last year? Still on the roster, Reuben Randall.
But I don't know if they're going to want to put him in a special teams area considering now he's got to step up as a wide receiver.
Let's rewind about 15 seconds or so because we've talked about this on this show. At least I know I've talked about it with both of you guys. The 53 that you see tomorrow is not going to be the 53 that plays against Detroit.
They could try to find the return guy that gets cut
you
loose. That would not surprise me. I agree.
And by the way, it won't be Trindon Holliday.
No, because he actually was someone that gets on the field and plays.
Thank you.
Correct. 201-939-4513. We'll go through our 53s as we go along. I want to get to the calls. A couple of guys have been holding already. I want to get to you and start rolling through it, and we'll go through our 53s as we go along. Want to get your opinions on the phones first. Also, hashtag Giants chat. Lance and I will be monitoring that. Dot's got his phone out. He'll be looking at that too. And we'll talk to you for the next hour or so about the Giants' final 53. Let's go to AJ in South Carolina. He'll start us off this morning. AJ, what's going on?
Good morning, guys. I got two questions for you. I like what I saw out of Corsi or Charles last night.
Quarles.
Of course, last night.
Yeah, I thought he made some good plays on the defensive line, and I think he has a legitimate case here on the roster bubble to be one of those defensive linemen.
And my second question is the passing game. I got a little concerned about the passing game.
Well, and I think you phrased it right, AJ. And AJ, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it, bud. It's concern for the passing game, not necessarily concern for Eli. I know some people say they're one and the same guys. I get that. But Eli's day would have looked a lot better yesterday. Reuben Randall catches the first pass that's thrown to him and actually runs the correct route or has the correct timing, however you want to phrase it, on the second one. You know, Eli needs some help here, and if he doesn't get help from his wide receivers, the guy that's supposed to be the second-best weapon on this team, it is going to be a long season for Eli.
Well, they moved the ball on the ground last night, John. So, yeah. As you mentioned, if Eli Manning converts with Reuben Randall on even one of those two passes, that's a couple of extra snaps to the first-team starters.
No question.
It interrupted the whole flow of the offense. It is disturbing, and after five preseason games, you would have hoped that there would have been a few more bright spots out of the first-team offense, with the exception of that drive that went 11 plays, 91 yards in the previous game right before the end of the first half. Outside of that, you'd be hard-pressed to find consistency within the drive. So, you know, that's a big area of concern. However, a number of the wide receivers have been banged up, specifically Odell Beckham Jr., who's expected to play a prominent role on offense. At least that's what the anticipation was heading into the season. The running backs, I think, are going to be more heavily involved in the offense. So that is something to at least keep close tabs on. But Randall needs to be a more consistent wide receiver. That's the one thing that you can take away from the preseason, especially if he's going to be the guy that's going to complement Victor Cruz.
201-939-4513. Back to the phones. Oren is in New York. Oren, what's going on?
How are you doing, John?
How are you, Oren?
I'm doing good here in New York. Got to go back to VA next week. But I was watching the game yesterday with my friends, and offense, it just didn't look right. It didn't look like the receivers were trying or nothing. Like, it's like they feel too cocky about themselves that they don't want to put no production on the field. Like, I'm saying, like, why don't you bench them and put people out there that wants to actually try and go catch the ball?
Wait a minute. Receivers look like they were too cocky? Receivers look like they're like, receivers may be looking like they're not producing. But cocky?
Yeah.
I would not say that at all.
No, I'm not trying to say
they looked
cocky.
They look a little more lost to me.
No, I meant like they just feel like they don't have to do nothing, like produce on the field.
There isn't a sense of urgency, I think is what Orange
tried
to say.
All right. Well,
yeah,
that's what I meant to say.
I'm sorry.
Here's what's troubling to me about what happened last night in particular, and it's kind of typical of the way Reuben Randall goes about his business. He's got tremendous talent, but that fire is not nearly as hot as it needs to be. And the Giants need him to step up and become a legitimate number two receiver in this league. And there are too many times with his inconsistencies where he does not show he's got the drive to become a true number two receiver. And last night, when he had the ball go through his hands, and then when he didn't run his route, and he kind of looked as though, maybe it wasn't troubling to him. And then in the post game, John, you had him in the locker room as he was being questioned by the writers, and it didn't seem like he was really all that disturbed about it either. That's an issue for me, okay? That's an issue because
That's what I'm saying right there.
Okay, like, well, you just didn't describe it correctly. But I'm with you.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
It's up early in the morning. Like, I woke up to talk because it was really making me mad last night. And then, like, Jarrell Jernigan, like, come on. And then not seeing Odell Beckham, he's our first-round pick. I was a little upset when y'all first got him. My brothers was like, nah, he's going to do good and all that. But I just didn't see him, Like, I'd rather take what's Carolina's number one first
Kelvin Benjamin. Kelvin Benjamin.
I'd rather take him. Big hype dude. He probably would have did something. He's on the field. That's what I like.
Well, that is true. He is
well, that's
playing.
A big step in the right direction.
All right, Orin, thank you. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Finish up. Orin, it's okay. Finish up. What else you got?
We always get rid of players that don't do. They don't do nothing on our team. But when they go to another team, like our team, Knicks, look what he did against us.
It's only a preseason game, Orin.
But still, he looked like he did, like he used to be when he first came to our team. And then what's up with Jason Pierre-Paul? I need to see some sacks out of him.
Well, I don't think you've seen quite enough. I don't think you've seen quite enough pressure out of JPP in the preseason. I wouldn't get obsessed with the sacks, considering he hasn't played a ton of snaps, Orin. But I think you would like to see a little bit more consistent pressure out of him. I like physically what he looks like out there. He looks like he's back physically. He looks active. But you're right. We haven't seen the product of that physicality and athleticism quite as much as maybe we would have liked so far in the preseason games.
Yeah, I'm gonna be faithful to the whole season and stuff. You know, I'm probably gonna lose some money on some games, but I'm still, like you said, buckets. I never heard that before, but yeah, I'm all right. But thanks for picking up my call and everything.
Hey, thanks for calling in, Orin. We appreciate it. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for listening.
You know, in the first two drives last night,
Paul's flipping pages.
JPP had a knockdown pass immediately in the game, and then also had two pressures, I believe. I thought, actually, last night, in his very limited amount of reps, he might have looked the best he has during the course of the preseason, and I can't find anything that will directly...
I remember the deflected pass. I don't recall the pressures.
Yeah, he had two pressures where he pushed his guy right back in Garoppolo's...
Garoppolo,
right back into his wheelhouse.
Right.
And I was like, okay... It's coming now. I could see it.
So he's power moves, huh?
Oh, I saw two power moves
last
night.
And with the back and the shoulder, that's actually very important.
Where he absolutely drove the guy back into the quarterback's comfort zone. And I thought that I said to myself, okay, that's pretty good. Let's see what else. And then before I knew it, it was like two or three possessions in, and he was out of the game. So we didn't get a chance to see more.
Exactly.
Now the question is this an official pressure or is this a Paul Dottino legal pad pressure? I think there's a difference. We need to clarify that for the audience, Paul.
Well, you understand, of course, that the binoculars are always out when I'm on the sidelines.
201-939-4513. Sometimes Paul gets so close he doesn't need the binoculars, and that's when he puts himself into danger.
X-ray vision we're talking about.
Let's go back
you
to
remember
the
when Jarvis Green Ellis almost ran me over in New England?
I know. I was very disappointed when he missed. Let's go to Nugs in Minnesota. Nugs, you're up next. What's going on, pal?
Hey, what's going on, man?
How are you, Nugs?
Y'all are cracking me up over here, man. Yeah, sometimes Paul sees so much, I think he's a line judge or something. But
well, Paul watches Paul watches that TV copy about 18 times after the game on Sunday, so nobody puts more eyeballs on this thing than Dottino.
I tell you what, the NFL does not want to put a flag in my pocket. They do not want to do that. They got enough trouble with penalties
now,
these
now,
days.
Paul, I have a suggestion for you. I think you should invest in some type of tablet so you can combine two of your favorite activities. You can download the game onto the tablet, so in the middle of your power walk, you could watch the copies of the game while you're walking.
Actually, you want to know something really
scary?
Oh,
no. What? You have like a portable TV or something?
I have downloaded the NFL Game Rewind app on my phone.
Oh, boy.
Which does allow me to replay the game on my phone while I power walk.
I've got that.
Is that cool?
That's how I catch a lot of games.
I like that.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
And it's, so it's hard like, to grade, like, though, because access. It's really, I mean, to get the detail on your
screen.
Phone,
yeah.
it's HD.
This is why you need to get a tablet.
Yeah, but then I might trip or get hit by a bus.
Like, you can multitask.
You're going to be locked in on the phone. But all I know is that if anybody's out there in Leonia, right, look out. You're going to see a man walking about 30 miles per hour with his head in his phone, and he's going to just be barreling people over left and right, and that is Paul Dottino. Nugs, go ahead. What do you got for me, pal?
Nice park.
I've got a couple of things. The last caller, what was his name, Orin?
Yes.
He really touched on something that really just kind of had me boiling last night. I was like, come on, Ruben. Come on. You know, that passes right there in your hands, and it just goes through your hands, and you're just like, oh, whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's going to count as an incompletion against Eli's stat line. Those are the type of plays that I was talking about when I called in a couple of days ago. The type of plays where it doesn't seem like – it seems like we drafted players besides Victor Cruz. And Victor Cruz is the way he is because of how he had to come into the league. Nothing was guaranteed to him. He came in and he had to – and he still got that fire. You feel me? But we got these second-round, third-round guys. They come in here and they drop passes and they don't even do push-ups. They don't – you know what I'm saying? It's just like, oh – you know, they're you just blew that off, dude. You know what I'm saying? Now, what if that's in the game? You know what I'm saying? Now, this is what I think. I think that Ruben Randle needs to be, you know, real careful about his job, because before we know it, he'll be the third string wide receiver. Because I know what's gonna happen. Like in the second, third game of the season, Coughlin's gonna go, okay, let me see how this Corey Washington and Victor Cruz tandem works real fast. And Eli's going to see what it's like to throw to Corey Washington. You know, he hasn't gotten that chance yet. And I think that's a card that we've got up our sleeve that, you know, that we're going to see later on. Plus, I was just watching Eli this morning on NFL Network, and he was saying that they weren't doing any checks and stuff at the line and blah, 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 blah. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to give him a pass. This is my real question, and it's good that you guys are pause on here, because I wanted to ask him this question. Why don't more teams try to convert these tight ends who are like 6'7", 270? You know, you're not going to make it as a tight end, but why don't we try to put you guys under the Jason Peters Act and, you know, convert you over to a lineman? Like stash a couple of these big guys with nice feet, you know what I'm saying, who could make it on our squad as a tight end. Let's stash them on our practice squad.
Physically speaking, from an athletic standpoint, it is very difficult for a guy who has a certain skill set at that size to be able to say, we're going to throw 30 pounds on you, and this is what you're going to have to do. The Jason Peters of the world are very rare indeed.
Now, one of the guys,
he's a real athlete, a special athlete.
To date us, one guy that could have done that is Howard Cross. Howard Cross is a guy in the 90s that probably could have put that weight on and probably could have pulled off being an offensive tackle.
The truth is, the last 3 years, he kind of was an offensive tackle. Hey, Howard, we love you, my friend, but come on, you know the truth.
Thank God he's not here, because he'd be dead right now.
I've just got one more comment. I'm gonna take it off the line. We should make Anita like vice president of player personnel or whatever. So you know what I'm saying? Because it just seems like some of these guys are just out here like they just know they're getting a pass, and that's another shot at Ruben Randle. I really did not like that, because Eli's been taking heat all preseason. You know, Eli's not getting no passes out here. You know what I'm saying? And I'm just telling any Giants fans that's listening right now, light Ruben Randle up, because I did not like that. And I watched his post-game interview, and I did not like that. I did not like that. I want to see something out of him, or I want to see Corey Washington take his job. And I'll listen to what you guys have to say online.
Thank you, Nugs. I appreciate it. Hey, look, and I do think there is a sense of urgency here to figure out what to do with this passing game. We think they're going to be able to run the ball. We think they'll be able to play defense. We don't know about the passing game right now. And to me, it's more about the receivers than it is about Eli. And look, once Odell Beckham Jr. gets back, he will push Ruben Randle for that second wide receiver spot. And Corey Washington, if he makes his team, which I think is very likely, you know, he might push him a little bit too at some point. But look, Coach Coughlin was very poignant. He said the worst play of the game was the Ruben Randle miscommunication with Eli Manning. Very rarely will you hear Coach say something that specific in a post-game press conference. And Lance, I thought it was very pointed. I thought he did it intentionally. And I think people should pay attention when Coach says something like that.
He tends to generalize, and that's a good point. He did make notice of the fact that that was the worst play. And he was fairly happy with the production overall, but he noted that when it came to that first series, he was not very pleased with Ruben Randle's decision-making. And listen, you go back to last season, guys, Randle was very up and down. He'd have games where he'd grab two touchdowns, he'd look like he was one of the best wide receivers, and then he'd have another game where he caught the ball in the end zone, and all of a sudden he fumbles the football.
Well,
you scratch your head a lot.
He what, five? 5 touchdowns in 6 games in the middle of the year, and besides those games, he'd something like less than 15 catches the rest of the year.
He
so,
would come and go.
Yeah, he really would. And look, Coach said flat out that can't happen. So if that doesn't raise the alert on Ruben Randle, remember, they've had to raise the alert on him before. It's not like they haven't had to, you know, kick him in the fanny or light a fire on their own before. Remember, as a rookie, when they had the "we're going to rip Ruben Randle" week, and Kevin Gilbride, Coach Coughlin, and Eli all individually called him out in individual press conferences, and that people think that helped turn Ruben Randle around. So I don't know. I'm not saying that has to happen again, but maybe this is a guy that, you know, Paul, you have to keep the pressure on, and you can't just let kind of, you know, very calmly drift along.
The bad news for me is that one of the things we heard when they drafted Odell Beckham is that he is a friendly competitor from LSU, and that he and Randle know each other well. They will push each other well. They will continue to have competitions between each other about how many catches and touchdowns they're going to have, and they will drive each other to be a dynamic combination.
Unless they're competing for the number of hamstring stretches you can perform in a day, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that's happening
well,
right now.
Well, to me, that is the real double whammy here, right? Because not only has Randle not looked very good, you've got Beckham who can't get on the field, and I don't know if this is a byproduct of it or not. The only thing these guys are pushing is their way through the supermarket aisles trying to find a carton of milk. They're not pushing anybody on the field, that's for sure.
201-939-4513. Andrew in Stanhope, New Jersey. Andrew, you're up next. What's going on, pal?
Hey, what's going on, guys? I'm glad Paul's here because I'm going to leave you with a question, and it's more Paul is a little older, so he'll be able to judge, you know, going back.
Why does everybody call me old?
Because you are old.
Thank you.
Well, I remember, too. It's going, you know, into the 70s, early 80s. But Nuggs, Howard Cross, I loved him. When he did catch a pass, it reminded me of Darth Vader. Like, if he played football, like big, you know, big stiff guy running with the football.
That's not nice. No, that's really not nice. Look up Howard Cross's stats. The first half of his career, he was a competent receiver. In fact, one year I think he caught a half a dozen passes in the end zone from Phil Simms. Everybody rips on Howard. It's not fair.
Hey, wait. Well, first of all, why is calling somebody Darth Vader a rip? Darth Vader is one of the most intimidating characters in cinema history. Okay. If Howard's that intimidating, I think that's a compliment.
You find him intimidating?
Darth Vader?
No.
Come on.
Howard Cross.
Yes, Howard Cross is intimidating. He scares the hell out of me. No question.
Plus, last week I called and I asked which tight end was most like Howard Cross that's on the roster, because that's who I wanted most, is a great blocker.
Well, Kellen Davis receiver is your answer there, Andrew. Kellen Davis, yep, is the guy on the roster most like Howard.
And when Howard Cross got criticized as a receiver or lack of skills as a receiver, he had the best comeback. He said, if I wasn't a good receiver, they wouldn't throw to me in the Super Bowl. I think he caught a touchdown in the Super Bowl.
Well, and you know what? The other thing, Andrew Howard's claim to fame, they kept trying to bring in these receiving tight ends to take his job, and one by one, every single one of them failed. Every single one of them. Howard wouldn't let anybody take his job.
It's true.
You're right. It took a decade later till Shockey came. And I wanted to say I'm very impressed with the defense. I think the defense is solid. And speaking of tight ends, maybe Adrian Robinson, who's the JPP of tight ends. But DeMonster, he's the Victor Cruz of the defense. He looks like a playmaker big time. And you hear the term no-name defense. This is a big-name defense role. Amukamara, Thurman, the Terminator, Beeson. And I wanted to ask, my question is, the line is good. It looks very solid. It doesn't have the, you know, phenomenal pass rushers like when they had Strahan and Tuck and O.C. Kiwi all at the same time, all in their prime. But the question I wanted to ask, when they did have that line in 2006 through 2008 or whatever, where would you rank that defensive line among the all-time great defensive lines like the Pittsburgh Steel Curtain and the Purple People Eaters? I put it right up there with any line in the history of football. I'll hang up and I'll listen to your response.
Thanks, Andrew. Appreciate it.
I'm not sure how to respond to that, because as good as the Super Bowl, I guess he's talking about the Super Bowl 42
team. 07, I'm assuming.
Yeah, the Super Bowl 42 team.
When you had Stray and O.C. in his prime, Tuck in his prime.
Yeah,
and
as good as they were, okay, as good as they were, you could make an argument right off the top that they weren't even as good as the Super Bowl 21 defensive line. that had George Martin and Leonard Marshall and Jim Burt and you know, guys like Curtis McGriff coming in off the bench. I mean, John Washington, who was a very, very stellar defensive tackle. I have absolutely no idea where he was going with that, because then he starts throwing out the steel curtain and some of those other phenomenal defensive lines of the past. Andrew, I'm sorry. I think you must have rolled out of bed and hit your head before you made that phone call. Because
there's always a taking shots at the poor kid.
Well, because he's just way, way out of bounds. I mean, look, remember, if he wants to talk Giants, what about Katkavich, Robustelli, Moduleski, and Greer? I mean, come on. You can't possibly put them in the same breath. Look, as pass rusher,
I love this.
No, just, you know, just you got to be on the same continent when you come to when you come into a debate like that.
Now, what continent would you put him on? Is he all the way in like Antarctica or like just in like Europe?
No, he's halfway across the world.
Okay, so Asia.
Well, Andrew likes to reminisce a lot.
He does.
Every phone call is some historical note. Personally, I'm interested to talk about the 2014 Giants.
Well, I don't have a problem with it, but let's put it in the right perspective.
No argument here. There's a number of great defensive lines that did not suit up for the New York Giants even.
That too. But, I mean, even if he just wants to talk Giants lines, that was not the best defensive line they've ever had.
I remember this too. I think Andrew is thinking more in terms of the pass rush. There's the other, you know, part of this, and that's stopping the run. While those are some great pass rushers on this team, that 07 Giants defense, that is some issue stopping the run from time to time that year, which they finally did figure out at the end. But like you said, let's not start comparing them to all-time greats. A little bit out of bounds. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Kevin in New Jersey. Kevin, you're up next. What's up, bud?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well, Kevin. How are you?
Good. Hey, I got cut off the other day. You gave me two shots there, but I didn't realize it.
No worries, Kevin. Go ahead.
Hey, I'm really concerned, and I hope this isn't like the old Giants, way. I'm worried that this Corey Washington isn't going to make the team.
Kevin, you know? Kevin, let me just say, and look, I like to think I'm pretty honest and I get some things right. I would be blown away, shocked, ridiculously, insanely surprised if Corey Washington is not on this 53-man roster.
Oh, good, because you're making me feel a little bit better. But it worries me to see him not even get the shot with the ones at any time, especially with the production that the other wide receivers have been putting out this preseason.
Now, Kevin, let me put it this way, too. To me, Washington's easily the fifth wide receiver, so that's one thing. Number two, I'm not telling you that if he makes the team, he's going to be getting significant playing time here, you know, with the ones with Eli when this season starts. That I'm not telling you. I'm telling you he will be on the 53.
Okay, that's good. I'd also like to see him get some playing time with the ones, just because it just seems like he is the most productive. I know it's against the twos and the threes and the fours. I understand that, but you know, we don't have a wide receiver of his build. It just seems like a perfect fit. You know, with
no, Kevin, look, I understand. I think he, you know, if Ruben Randle continues to struggle, he's a guy you can put across from Cruz. He's a different body type, different type of guy, and theoretically, it works. But, you know, look, the coaches grade him out in practice. They grade him out in meetings. They're seeing stuff that the fans and even I don't see, that Lance doesn't see, that Paul doesn't see. Well, maybe not that Paul doesn't see. But, you know, these are things that the coaches evaluate these guys on a day-to-day basis.
Okay. All right. Well, you made me feel a little bit better, guys. Thank you very much.
Happy to help, Kevin. No problem.
You know, I asked Coach yesterday, and John, we talked about it after our broadcast production meeting, that I don't think he truly understood what I was saying.
He was all over you in that production meeting.
I think he thought that there was too much into it. I mean, it was a simple question. I tried to ask him, Lance, with all of the new rules in the CBA, and there are fewer practices, less hitting, everything, you know, that we've talked about over the last couple of years. Coach says that every single step of these guys is graded now. What they do on the not only on the walkthroughs, but also in the film room, and in the, you know, at the question sessions that he peppers guys with questions during the week a lot of times in the classroom sessions, and those are all the types of things that he has to put into his grade. So what I tried to get out of him was, how much of a dramatic impact can this one game tonight, the final preseason game of a guy's summer resume, so to speak, have on making the team? And Tom, for some reason, thought I was asking him a real deep question, and he
went,
"What is
Paul,
that?
I know what you're trying to get to. Why don't you just get to the question that you really want to ask?" And we're all looking around like, "Coach, what are you talking about?"
I mean, just have some beef with you, apparently.
Well, who doesn't?
Yeah, but it goes to the caller's point in that, as Tom has explained to us, he's had to grade players differently than he used to because of the way the CBA is set up. And so I guess when I followed up with Tom, I said, well, Tom, what you're basically telling me is guys who are razor thin can make a difference tonight if it's that close. But I don't sense that after all the grades are in for 5 weeks of summer camp that a guy could have made two or three extra plays last night and suddenly made a dramatic impact. I kind of think that if Tom, in his own mind, had in, let's say, yesterday morning, decided, I think these are the guys I'm cutting. Outside of maybe one or two razor-thin guys, I don't think anybody could really make a difference.
I would agree with you, but I think that there's some of those borderline players where they want to give them that show-me opportunity, and if they actually take advantage of the opportunity, perhaps that, you know, moves the pendulum slightly if we're talking about the fourth or fifth defensive tackle.
But I think it would have to have been that close, though.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
It would have to be very neck and neck.
I mean,
to get to that final game.
I think we both think, John, that Mario Manningham is not going to be on the 53. All three of us probably agree with
that. And even if he didn't get hurt, he would have had to have a 6-catch, 98-yard, 2-touchdown.
I was going to say maybe 12 catches for 185 yards and 3 touchdowns.
You get the point.
He'd have to have a Hall of Fame preseason performance.
Yeah. I mean, and that's really kind of what I was trying to get at. I wasn't specifically talking about Mario, but that's really what I was trying to get at with Coach, is that I just did not know going into last night's game what kind of superhuman effort right. It was going to take for somebody to suddenly make his 53.
One other thing that I wanted to throw out, not to get off topic, piggybacking off of Kevin's last phone call when he was showing concern over Corey Washington making the team and that he'd like to see more of him on the first team. I always reference back to some previous preseason stars, and one guy that jumps off the page to me is Adewale Ajomo, because Ajomo had a very good preseason.
Who, by the way, got cut by Dallas when they're cut down to 75 a few days ago.
And Ajomo had a knack to get to the quarterback, was very active, made the 53, but then what happened was he was never active. And the reason why he wasn't active was because the coaching staff saw something in practice that at least raised a red flag. I'm not putting Corey Washington in that same department,
right.
But John, this is what you were alluding to. It's one thing to see him make some great grabs in the preseason. It's another thing then to overlook what the coaches are seeing during practice.
Well, I'll give another example. You know, people made a huge deal about those two Adrian Robinson catches 2 weeks ago, but that's what you see. You see the guy, a huge guy, 6'5", you know, 260, catching the ball in the middle of the field, converting a fourth and long, but the fans don't see the fact that he decided not to block anybody on running play 4 plays earlier, that he ran the wrong route 3 plays earlier, they didn't know what play or where to line up, you know, 3 series before that. And those 3 mistakes could actually be more costly and more important than catching that pass that goes right to him over the middle. Those other things are just as important, if not more. So things that maybe fans and even we don't see, we don't know what plays are. So unless we see it impact the play, we might not even know when a guy screws up on a certain play. There's no way for us to know or anybody to know besides the coaches who know the plays and grade the tape. So it's very hard to come to decisions just based on off what we see in person, what we see on TV, or even what we see in practice. It's impossible.
You mentioned Ajomo. I think he may have been one of the best preseason Giants that I can remember in my time around here.
He's no Sonoris Moss, Paul.
In terms of a guy who really, really looked good in preseason and then became a total flame out. On offense, Keith Elias was one of those guys. He was all pro August, you know, and good kid out of Princeton. Real good kid. Played special teams, did some kickoff returns, but as a running back, boy, did he get it done in the preseason. 1 year, I think he had like 400 yards rushing in the preseason.
That was like, what, like 99, late 90s?
Yeah, I think so, John.
Something like that?
I know we were still up at Pace in those days.
Oh, okay.
Not at Pace, at Albany.
It was the Fossil years.
Yeah.
It was Fossil years for sure, right?
I want to say Reeves.
It was Reeves. It was Reeves, okay.
We were up at Albany. I shouldn't say Pace. Jeez, I'm really dating myself. and it was like, you know, and Keith was around the NFL for 5 or 6 years, you know, but he was a bit player. You know, that one preseason, he was a monster. And it's like, Okay, I get it.
201-939-4513. Mike is in New Jersey. By the way, guys, I know we see the lines are all busy. If you're calling up, the lines are either busy or it's just ringing through. Keep calling back. We're bringing people up as quickly as we can. Everything's off the hook, and we will get to you. Mike, you're up. What's up?
Hey, good morning, guys. The three amigos.
Yes, sir. We decided to bring the whole family in today.
How's everything going?
Everything's great, Mike. How's everything with you?
Very good. Thanks for asking. Listen, you know, I officially now think it's finally time to worry. I know you guys have been preaching, you know, it's only preseason. It's a new offense. Give it time to gel. We're not showing all our tricks. We're you know, running vanilla. But when New England's twos are kind of washing out our ones for the first half, I got to say, I'm now worried. It's the fifth preseason game. We didn't show much on either side of the ball. And I don't know, talk me down, because this is frightening. Detroit just destroyed somebody last night, and in a few days we're going to be up there. And I have a sinking feeling about this season. Talk me down, gentlemen.
Well, you shouldn't be very happy with what you've seen out of this offense. Tom Coughlin's not very happy either. And so your worries are,
Legitimate.
They're founded. I mean,
ooh, I like that word. I like that.
Yeah.
They are founded.
I don't necessarily believe that
how
it means
profound.
I don't think it means automatic doom. But let's face it. They've got 10 days now to start juggling with some things to figure out what it is that they need to do to at least be competitive. And I'm going to tell you what I said last week on this program, and it continues to ring true to me. The Giants are going to have to ride their defense and their running game at least through the first month of the season. So please, what you need to do is lower your expectations for this offense and understand that they must manage games if they're going to be competitive. Do not buy into whatever the rest of the newspaper guys told you when McAdoo got here, that this new West Coast offense was the magical elixir and the solution, and you were going to see scoreboards that were going to explode out of the stadium with these great offensive stats.
In fairness, though, you know, and sometimes they don't, but I think in this case, I don't think the newspaper writers were all very negative on Kevin Gilbride. I don't feel like they were jumping on him and asking for his head and blaming him for all the Giants' issues. I think generally speaking, the people that covered the team were pretty fair to Gilbride. I thought the fans were more anti-Gilbride than the writers were.
Well, I thought, though, that when McAdoo came in with the West Coast offense and his pedigree from New Orleans and San Francisco and Green Bay and stuff, I think there was a lot of buildup that we're going to see all of this nouveau stuff, and it's going to be wild and exciting. They're going to whip the ball around like arena football. And I honestly never bought into that.
Well, the biggest conversation in the offseason was it's going to be better off for Eli's decision-making. He'll get rid of the football quicker. The running backs will be heavily involved, and it won't be a repeat of all of the issues that plagued them last season. I think that's what all the buildup was about. And we haven't really seen it come to fruition, at least through the five preseason games.
Finish up, Mike. What else you got for us?
Two other quick points. On the positive side, I thought John Jerry looked fantastic last
night.
He
did.
I watched the game, and I actually DVR'd the first half and watched it again just to kind of pretend, put on my poorly D pants and watch the interior line play by play. And he was blowing people up. He was getting into this, the linebackers. He was pass blocking well. I was very impressed with John Jerry. He's a big boy too. He looks bigger than our tackles. So.
Nah, yeah, he's John Cherry's a monster, no question. What's your final point, Mike?
Hynoski. He was looking great. I saw him explode somebody last night. I thought he's having a great preseason. What is the prognosis on his injury? Because if we lose him, I think it's a step down with Connor, and I'll be really disappointed because I'm looking forward to seeing him play this year.
Well,
thank
Mike,
you, guys.
Thanks for the call, Mike. We appreciate it. I think we'll find out more about Hynoski in about 2 hours when we speak to the players and hear from head coach Tom Coughlin. So it's a wait and see. You hope it's nothing too serious. It is the same shoulder, or at least it appeared to be the same shoulder, that he fractured last September that cost him a season. Obviously, coach after the game said it was some type of cuff problem, assuming he means a rotator cuff. So that's something to keep an eye on. And, guys, I think this is a good time to talk about it because we haven't really touched on it much, and we will get to our final 53s as we go along. I want to get to as many calls as we can before we do because that can take a while going through full 53s. A decision's going to have to get made here. How much faith this staff, guys, has in Hynoski staying healthy? Because I think all three of us agree. if you take both guys and you say you're getting 16 games out of them, Hanoski is the better fit. He does more of what McAdoo would want in terms of a receiver, blocking in space, being more consistent, being a little bit of a better athlete than Connor is, and more consistent, even though Connor will have those violent blow-up type of hits. But can you trust him to stay healthy? And I don't know the answer to that question. I think if it's close, you always pick the guy that you think is going to be on the field.
Well, part of the problem here, John, is that he's a fullback who needs his shoulder.
Exactly.
Okay, that's his lead weapon. And when it occurs to the same shoulder that it occurred to last year, that's a huge issue for me, and I think it will be for the coaches. I made my change overnight. John Connor's now on my 53.
I did the same.
I could not keep Henry on there, despite the fact that I had him winning the job throughout training camp. To re-injure that same shoulder, you know what they say a lot of times, John, after you've had surgery on a particular limb or joint or whatever, it's never quite the same again. Now, some guys will tell you they can rehab it and make it better and stronger, but in more cases than not, it's never the same.
That body part is more likely to get re-injured at some point.
And now that it's already happened, I'm telling you right now, if Henry Hanoski makes this team, and I hope that he does for his sake.
I love Henry. He's a great guy.
And I do think that for the Giants, he's a better fit.
Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you right now, let's just say for argument's sake, he's out for a couple of weeks. I wouldn't be surprised if by week 8, week 9, week 10, that shoulder rears its ugly head again. And that's the kind of trepidation you have to deal with.
And by week 8, week 9, John Connor might be another roster.
You can't afford to do that.
Exactly.
So I made the change overnight.
Well, you could put Hynoski on IR designated to return. I mean, you could use him in that situation. Jeff Schwartz is another, obviously, candidate for that.
I think
position.
That's where you have to save that spot for.
I think it depends on the prognosis for Hynoski. If Hynoski is without just question. Getting a bump or a bruise, then you say, don't worry about it. But if he's somebody who you're thinking is out 3 or 4 weeks, you have to keep Connor. I mean, you can't take a chance.
And I'm happy Mike brought up John Jerry, by the way, because I thought that's something that we should have mentioned off the top, but it's my fault that we didn't. He had a very strong game, him and Weston Richburg. I talked to Weston in the hallway this morning, and you know, I asked him, how many snaps did you play, like 40, 45? He threw somewhere between 35 and 40, somewhere in that range. So certainly a ton of snaps. Both those guys played well. John Jerry, not just mauling people, actually getting out in space and moving, pulling, stuff that even when he played his best football in Miami, we didn't see him do a whole
lot. Where'd that come from?
I have no idea. And you know what? Maybe, look, he came, he had that offseason knee surgery. He came back, and he's been working his way back slowly. Maybe we finally saw the real product last night.
You're up in the booth, okay, so you don't have the closed-circuit audio that I have with John when I'm on the field. And I kept flicking my microphone onto him. I'm like, John, did you see Jerry's block? Did you see that? He just blew up somebody else. And it's like, I really had never in my wildest dreams, based on what I had seen at practice, thought that John Jerry could put that performance on tape last night. Not that it was all pro, but it was solid, really solid. And in practice, and I think you guys would both agree with me, he basically looks like a mass of humanity that can't move a whole lot or move very well.
Which makes sense why in the past he's been a better pass blocker than a run blocker, because you take a couple steps back, you just get in the way, you're that big.
And I think part of it also is the fact that he sees the opportunity. With Mosley out, Jeff Schwartz banged up, Jerry knows he could start week 1, Paul. And I understand that this sort of came out of left field, but sometimes that's all it takes to motivate a player. We were talking about Reuben Randall earlier. When you don't have somebody pushing you, you know, you don't necessarily bring it up a notch. John Jerry brought it up a notch because he realizes he has a legitimate shot at being a starting guard.
No question about it. 201-939-4513. Back to the phones. Let's go to Joe in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's going on, pal?
Good morning, the three aces.
Yeah, so. That's right, Joe.
Right. It's a privilege to talk to you. No, I just want to say, I like Paul said last week, I think the Giants definitely have to manage the game. And the key is they have that running game, and they look great, them guys. And if we can get Beckham in there, and then when they're, you know what I mean, because they're going to be jamming our receivers and the safeties and linebackers coming up, I think that's a key where – if he can get back in there, and then Eli could hit them guys on some long ones. But the main thing, we have the running game, and I think we really have a fine nucleus of young receivers and running backs there. And my one question is there, I guess there's no way they're going to keep the third quarterback there. I can't think of his
name. I would be shocked if Curtis Painter's on this roster. Nassib's done enough to be the backup. Tom, in his past roster constructions, and the Giants, for that matter, have only carried two when they feel like the backup's good enough. I don't see why they would keep three.
Two things real quick. A, if I were the Giants, there were some really, really bad backup quarterbacks in the NFL. I would try to peddle Painter, who had a good preseason.
Yeah, you might be able to get like a conditional seven for him, something like
that.
I
mean, they just did that with the kicker.
Yeah.
So why not try that with Curtis Painter? Make some phone calls and say, hey, you know what? He put some good stuff on tape in August.
Like the Rams.
Give me a conditional.
Like the Rams.
So I would do that, okay, before I cut him.
And number two?
Number two, quickly about the running backs. And it's funny, John, we just talked about the durability of Henry Hanoski. Well, Peyton Hillis did himself a huge favor last night.
He did.
He really solidified a roster spot in my mind with that power running game. He came through healthy. He looked good. He fought for the yardage. He did exactly what you expect Peyton Hillis to do. Good for him because he had missed several weeks with a sprained ankle.
Joe, finish up. What else you got? All right, Joe, thanks for the call, man. Appreciate it. 201-939-4513. Let's go back to the phone and say what's up to Carlos in Virginia. Carlos, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Doing well, Carlos.
All right. I got a thing. Things I wanted to get off my chest. For starters, they all the talk about Eli not, clicking well with his receivers or whatnot. But I think it falls down to the line, the offensive line. I mean, and it seemed like it's deja vu all over again.
Yeah, Carlos. You know what? And it's funny. I was thinking about this last night, Carlos, as I was going home, and I was thinking back to last year and all the issues they had. And, the obvious issue, like you said, was the offensive line. But to me, the shadow issue last year was the fact that there wasn't enough separation and no one was getting open. And Eli had no one to throw the ball to because they weren't creating space between themselves and the cornerbacks. And what scares me a little bit, I'm seeing the same exact issues this preseason. And that makes me a little bit nervous about the offense, which is why right now it's scary to say this, I'm on the same page as Paul. I think you have to depend on the running game and the defense. If you're playing 27, 24, 31, 28 games in September and October this year, this team's going to be in a lot of trouble. You have to protect the football. Yeah. You can't turn it over.
I mean, absolutely. The running game, I mean, I could see that the running game has improved a lot since last season, having Jennings and now Andre Williams and a healthy Peyton Hillis, which make a tandem right there in the backfield. So, but I think, there's got to be a lot of issues that need to be resolved with that offensive line. I mean, you got the playmakers. I mean, you got, the Victor Cruz, the receivers, and all the good stuff, but I think it just falls. I mean, to me right now, the heart is on that offensive line, and if you don't have a healthy offensive line, chances are, he's not going to get the protection that he needs to have enough time to make his plays.
Well, and that's been the biggest storyline throughout the course of the preseason. They've been playing musical
chairs. How
about the
last 3 years?
Three years, but specifically it's been troubling because it's come back to the forefront in the preseason. I think the biggest off-season aggressiveness shown by this front office was, let's go out and get some bodies. Let's make sure that we have some depth in case Beattie's not 100% or in case one of these free agents doesn't pan out. And they're pretty much back to square one, Paul, and that's very troubling.
We should mention, actually, Beattie did okay again last night.
He was fine.
I mean, he was able to now play limited reps three consecutive weeks and come through it okay. That's a positive sign.
And I don't think Eli saw much pressure last night as he did in the early games. I mean, they've been running the ball quite well throughout the last few games, but I think Eli had time yesterday. The problem was the timing was off a bit for some reason.
Carlos, finish up.
Okay, now just one question before I go. Mario Manningham, I mean, it seemed like, he's been trying to make this roster. Do you see any future in him making the roster this year?
Carlos, I think the Mario Manningham ship sailed with that injured calf last night, and quite frankly, it probably sailed a couple weeks before that. He just didn't show that same quickness, speed, and explosion that he showed in his first run here. Whatever that knee injury did to him, he never seemed to recover fully, and even if he was recovered physically, he never believed in his heart of hearts mentally that he was recovered, so he never looked like the same guy. So unfortunately, right now, it looks like Mario Manningham's Giants career is at an end once again.
Yeah, hopefully that'll open up the doors for guys like, you know, Preston Parker and Corey Washington, which, you know, throughout the preseason they did pretty well.
All right, Carlos, thanks for the call, my friend. Appreciate it. 201-939-4513. Let's go back to the phone and say what's up to Jeff up in Rhode Island. Jeff, long time no speak, bud.
I know. I've been around. I've been around, buddy. I've been listening every day. Sometimes I can't get through, but I don't know what to make of this team, you know? Especially on the offense. I mean, it really has me very concerned. But, you know, I made a cautionary call to the program about 3 or 4 months ago, telling everybody, all the Giants fans out there, to, you know, not take their time and be patient with this offense, because we had a whole lot of new pieces on the chessboard this year, and it might take a long time for everything to be melded together.
But you know fans don't want to do that.
Well, you know, I know they want. Everybody wants it today, but you're going to have to give them some more time. But anyway, here's one for you, Paulie. Now we got the baby back. We got the baby bull backfield now of Tucker Fredrickson, Ernie Coy, and Chuck Messine.
There you go.
A lot of talent, but not too much speed.
You forgot Steve Thurlow, too, okay?
Steve Thurlow. let's see. Who was the other one? I mean, there was a whole bunch of them.
I know. Bobby Duhon.
Bobby Duhon, yeah. Bobby Duhon.
You're bringing me back to my guys now.
Yeah, I know. Here's another one for you, Paulie. Okay, now this is a little history lesson for Lance, because after he's been a Giants fan for 45-plus years, he'll be wanting to talk about the old days.
Assuming you can keep me awake, Jeff, let's not get too far ahead.
Here's one from Ali Sherman, okay? This is for you, Paul. The screen is like Novocaine. You got to wait and let it take effect.
Yes. Yes.
Okay?
Very good.
How am I doing?
You know what, Jeff? You're doing great. And I will say it does apply to something that is relevant to today, Lance. And that is, Victor Cruz mentioned this the other day, and so did JPP. And it builds off of Ali's comment. A lot of times, especially in the preseason when you're playing limited snaps, you can't set guys up. And that happens in football a tremendous amount of times. People don't understand that, hey, not every play is designed to get a first down. Sometimes you're running that off-tackle play to the left because you want to see what the middle linebacker is going to do, because maybe two series later, you're going to take advantage of it.
And you're talking about game playing. This happens in individual matchups as well.
Oh, no
one
doubt.
One player setting up another. There's no question about
you
it.
You want to get them to bite
the
so
whole
that
game,
finally opens up.
Micro and macro, the entire game is a chess match between one team and one player and another.
Why do you think the National Football League is the greatest game on God's green earth? I mean, come on. Because every single snap, you've got these 11 chess matches going on, mano a mano, all over the field. It's the greatest thing ever invented. And that's why. Now,
I can pick out some better things
no,
that were invented.
There's nothing better than the NFL. But anyway, here's the point. He has meshed the past with the present. Jeff, you make an outstanding point, and it is relevant. It is absolutely relevant. The Giants, because of their 10, 15, 20 snaps with their starters, have certainly not been able to do some of that. And I would think that if they do get to play 3 quarters and 4 quarters and everything else, that we will see some more success because there will be some of that going on. So you're absolutely right to bring that up.
Jeff, congratulations, because the last caller that tried to reminisce didn't really get to Paul's heart. That was Andrew earlier. So the fact that you reminisced and also made a good point, you are stepping in the right direction.
Well, that's good. I mean, I know what Paulie enjoys. We both enjoy the same thing. But one other thing. Does anybody really think this Adrian Robinson's going to stick? I mean, to me, it's time to kiss this guy goodbye. So what do you guys think?
Well, that drop last night didn't help him.
Yeah, the fumble. Yeah. I mean, look, ball, if there's anything that's going to get in trouble with the coach, it's ball protection. It's a good question. Will they want to cut bait with him after 3 years, or do you give him more after 2 years, or do you give him one more? Yeah, you know what, Jeff? It's a good question. If I was the one making the decisions, I'd probably cut him loose.
Yeah,
my gut feeling tells me that as of 4 o'clock on Saturday, he'll still be here, but if somebody else better is on the street after Saturday afternoon, I believe he is the fourth tight end right now. I think he's behind the other three, so I think he'd be the first one off the roster if they find somebody better on that proverbial scrap heap.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they go after anybody on a waiver wire. I'll be watching that tomorrow afternoon. You guys have a great day, okay? It was great talking to you again. And, Paulie, have a wonderful day, buddy, and we'll reminisce again, okay?
All right,
thank
man.
You, Jeff.
Thank you so much, Jeff. Paul, I can't wait for that.
You guys are both
make sure I'm here for this
here.
Show.
Go ahead. You guys
we
are
have three.
Bit. You have
you
three.
You have four.
Ends.
We
think,
have three.
I think there's going to be four.
I'm so torn with that fourth tight end because of what Tom Coughlin said earlier this week, the fact that he's not sold on any guy being a legitimate all-around, well-rounded tight end.
Which is why I think
end.
You need four.
Correct. That would be the argument to keep four. However, it's not as if Adrian Robinson has done an awful lot and put on a lot on film to say he's worth keeping as that fourth
but
guy.
But historically, though, you know, the Giants like to keep their draft picks around.
If you're standing in your kitchen and you have four loaves of stale bread on the counter, do you want to keep all four loaves of that stale bread, or do you want to throw away the one loaf that's got mold on it?
Well, but what if you have no other food in the kitchen and you have to eat something?
I might consider drowning myself.
No, what was the line last night? You turned to the devil to play the tight end, yes, right? We can bring that back. That may be an option.
There you go. I mean, look, I've got three tight ends, and my three are Fells, Donnell, and Davis.
Hey, look, I don't think there's any doubt those are the three guys on top of the depth chart right now. I really don't. Look, yesterday you saw Kellen Davis and Fells with the ones. You saw Donnell come in the second half with Adrian Robinson, and Donnell certainly outplayed Adrian Robinson, and frankly, he's outplayed him all preseason long. Davis is the best block. We've talked about it. Fells, to me, is the most well-rounded guy. He can do a little bit of everything. He's a veteran. He's got reliable hands. If Robinson's on the team, is he even playing? Is he giving enough on specials? That's the thing. Is he? He's not a great special teams player in my mind.
Well, here's the big question. Do you think you have enough versatility out of those other three tight ends? Do you have enough in the blocking department? Do you have enough in the receiving department? Do you have enough in the special teams department? If the answer is yes, there's no point in keeping a fourth tight end.
Development. You keep him as you want to develop him, and you don't think you can get him onto the practice squad.
Well,
now,
in order to develop him, he's got to stay healthy for once this year, true. And there's not even a guarantee in that department.
Paul, I don't mean to give you a headache. I'm sorry.
No, it's
he was so warm and cuddly and fuzzy earlier when Jeff was on the line.
Well, but then
now
we started talking about
you brought
tight
up
ends.
Adrian Robinson. Yeah. Yeah. It soured all of a sudden.
When you use the word development, you have to have already seen some progress and some promise. And quite frankly, Adrian Robinson just has not shown me enough promise to think that there's really a lot of development there worth trying to cultivate. And quite honestly, if he's the fourth tight end, John, he's not getting a jersey on Sunday anyway.
I understand.
Here's my thing.
I'm not arguing with any of that.
If it's between keeping a sixth wide receiver and a fourth tight end, I'd go with the sixth wide receiver.
Absolutely. That's not even close.
All right, we got two calls on the line here, guys. Let's take these two, and then we'll go through our 53s, and maybe we'll take a few more calls after that to close out the show. Let's go to Ann in D.C. next. Ann, you want to build on your call from yesterday. You got a lot of positive reaction on Twitter.
I do. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
How are you?
We're doing well.
Okay, I watched the Browns game last night because I'm officially on the Johnny Manziel bandwagon. And their receivers were awful, too, but last night a couple of them stepped up. But my question is that could it be that Eli is kind of burned out in New York? You can be kind of tired of being in the same place for 10 years. Because he still looks like, to me, I like everything McAdoo is doing, you know, rolling him out in the pocket. That looks good to me. But it looks like because the Giants organization has allowed the press to constantly be in there battering these players, that, you know, it's mentally getting to them. And that's why you see the Ruben Randle situation. I think they need to get the press out of the locker room.
But according to NFL rules, you can't get the press out of the locker room. That's simply not going to be allowed.
But I think it was, you know, for me, it's just the preseason. It's just the game football. But I think that it's outrageous the way the animosity is about beating players over the head, you know, Randall this, Eli that. It's just the game. And I think that you bring these guys up out of the South, and it's a culture shock because I'm a Southerner myself. And you put them in those big cities like New York, then you beat them down with the press. It just makes it where, hey, look, I don't want to play here. I'm tired. And I can't say that's the case. However, I do know that what Manning is on, what he has, what, 1 year left or 2 years left on his contract?
2 more years, including this one.
Okay. For at least this year, I think it would be fair for Jerry Reese. And I know Tom Coughlin is messing around in that front office, too, because he wants to keep those tiny receivers out there. But why can't they get on the phone with the Cardinals and kind of try to get Troy Nichols?
And I'm trying real hard here, but what is it that you put in your coffee in the morning? Seriously. Seriously, you're a nice person. You sound like a very nice person, but you are so off this planet, it's not even funny.
Right, but I put General Foods International coffee creamer.
That's good stuff. That's good stuff.
It is.
You might want to make sure that particular bottle or box was not tampered with at some point this morning.
I know how the Giants like to depend on the running game and defense, but I like to see the air game, and I already said all summer long, me and a couple of people, we wanted Troy Nicholas. We need to see the passing game, and the Giants don't want that. And so I'm not going to beat these players over the head. It is what it is. And you just go in the season with that. But I do like everything Ben McAdoo is doing. I think he's outstanding. And I'll leave it at that. Have a great day.
Thank you, Ed. Appreciate it. Paul, how exactly? Watching Paul's you know what? We're going to start simulcasting this on video in 2 weeks. I wish we had that on camera. I really, really
epic.
Do. It was tremendous.
Well, I've
how
had my fair share of running
with somebody
today,
like
so.
That.
Now,
seriously,
Paul, hold on a second.
Paul.
I have a question.
It's absolutely impossible.
Now,
how could anybody grade Ben McAdoo outstanding after what we've seen in the preseason? Everything is incomplete with him. This is all to be determined. To assign a grade to this offensive coordinator after what we have seen, this body of work in the preseason is insanity.
I'm just happy and trying to be positive.
No, it's insanity. There is absolutely no way you can grade this man's system or what he has done on August the 29th. You can't do it.
Well, Paul, you have to understand, she's been calling for Eli Manning to have rollouts left and right all of last season. So she got a rollout, and now she's on cloud nine. What I don't understand, bringing this back to somewhat reality, how could you tell me that drafting Troy Nicholas would have dramatically changed this offense? That I don't understand.
Now, I was a big Troy Nicholas fan, as you know, and I was hoping the Giants would get their hands on him. But the bottom line is, it would not, at this particular moment in time, have solved their offensive line woes, okay? Would not have solved the thin wide receiving core that they have right now. I mean, it would have helped in that they would have had a bona fide tight end, which would alleviate this by-committee approach that Tom Coughlin's forced to take. I grant you that. He probably would have stepped up and been the starter. But there were other issues here. I mean, you know what it is, John? I try so hard. I really try so hard to assume a minimum level of football acumen for every one of our callers. And then when you get a call like that, that is just so far out of left field.
I have a question. Have you not talked to Ann in D.C. before?
Yeah, but usually it's just funny. This wasn't funny. This was just insanity. I'm okay with funny. People want to be funny. They want to be goofy. Yeah, look, I'm funny. I'm goofy.
Speaking of which.
Anyway.
Speaking of which. I think I can figure out some things that are more or better inventions than football. Do you want to see if I can list some things to see if you believe that football's a better invention?
Do you
like toilet paper? Kind of important.
Well, I didn't know if you were going to go there.
And quite frankly, I could build off of that, but I will not.
Well, where I was going to go, Paul, what about the first man who woke up one day and invented the power walk? Where would you be right now?
Or no, even better.
I'd be bigger than John Jerry.
Dude, you probably would. Phil Knight, invent Nikes. What would you do with that?
There
Nikes?
You go. I love my Nikes.
There you go.
There you go. Move on.
The guy who invented the 8-track player so you could actually listen to music on your walk.
That's good. That's good.
201-939-4513. All right, we're going to go to Yub down in Georgia. Yub, what's going on, pal?
What's going on, guys?
How are you?
All right, first off, I'm...
Yub, I have a question. Is it Yub or Yub? We had a debate off the air. It's Yub.
Yub.
Okay,
I'm
we
sorry,
need to clarify
Yub.
This.
My bad. I thought it was Yub. Yeah. Yub, go ahead. My fault.
Right. John likes to ruffle the feathers of some callers once in a while. It's okay.
I try to get names right. My bad, Yub.
Poor Yub. He woke up today. He thought you were going to get his name right. And, you know, you dropped the ball like that.
Yeah. All right. My thing is, I think the fans, the worry words, they just need to stop calling in. I'm tired of hearing the guys talking about, you know, I'm worried about Eli and the offense and all of this stuff. Like, I think first off, they got to take into account, look at the first four games on the schedule. Or is it really going to call for Eli to have a big passing game against the Lions, the Cardinals, the Texans, and the Redskins? Like, these are guys that we can, also aside from the Texans with J.J. Watt, they'll get a lot of pressure, and Jadeveon Clowney, you know, against the line. But I think that we could rely on the run and the defense heavy because the defense is on point right now. The running game is looking really good with the 1-2 punch and with Hillis coming back with that, you know, with the power running game. But I think by the time we get to Atlanta and the Eagles, I think Eli will be comfortable in the pocket and comfortable with his you know, with his linemen, and hopefully by then he'll have a better connection with the wide receivers.
I will say this. I believe there are two must-win games here in the Giants' first seven before the bye. They have to beat the Cardinals and Texans at home because there are other games that are very, very tough. And I'll even almost go as far in to say you have to beat the Falcons at home because I think at Detroit is going to be a very tough game based on Detroit's strength on the defensive line and their passing attack and their ability to put points on the board. That's going to be a tough game. Three division games all on the road in the first seven. Those are all going to be tough games as well. So those are four very tough road games, and then you have those three games at home. To me, you have to at least win two out of three at home, if not sweep those three, if you want to get out of those first seven games at 4-3.
Yeah, see, I'm not saying about, like, as far as must win. I'm saying as far as, like, everybody worrying about Eli's performance. Like, you know, we can have him manage those four games. You know what I'm saying? Like, the Lions and the Cardinals, we can, you know, we don't have to force him to sit back in the pocket and make all these decisions and, you know, worry about him having a super great connection with the wide receivers.
Look, you guys know I like to joke around, but I'm not kidding around. Before you start worrying about Eli's performance through seven games, you better hope that that offensive line keeps him healthy for those first seven games.
Well, I think that's the point you was making, though. If you focus on the run, don't ask him to make a lot of 5- and 7-step drops. You protect the quarterback in the same way.
Well, there's no question that, you know, that's the M.O. here. I mean, if the Giants are going to do anything, they've got to manage games, rely on their defense, rely on their running game, and not put it on Eli's shoulders to have to win them. And that, you know, instinctively, Eli wants to be the guy. He believes that as the quarterback, it's his responsibility to be the leader. It's his responsibility to spark the offense. It's his responsibility to show confidence in his teammates. And it's his responsibility to make a play and give his guys a chance to make a play. This is going to go against everything that every fiber of his body to try to manage a game and let the running attack take over. It's going to be very hard for him to do, but he's got to, because that's the way he can survive, and that's the way this Giants team can compete, at least early in the season.
Oh, that was the missing element from last season. If you compare the two instances, you still had a shaky offensive line last year. Eli was not consistent, but you had no running game. This year, expectations are you're going to have a running game, and that could be a quarterback's best friend, assuming that there's some holes to find. And so far, there have been some holes to find, even with some backup offensive linemen in.
You finish up. What else you got?
All right. Two points. One thing, Adrian Robinson, he's done. Like, I don't want to see him lined up in a Giants uniform again. He's had, like, way too much time. He hasn't produced. You guys touched on it with, against the Steelers. He ran a couple of wrong routes. He missed on blocks, and he had pretty much the two catches that he had against him was pretty much a highlight of his preseason. But I think it was Simlas on Twitter touched on the topic of Corey Washington was a first-round draft pick, and he was making the plays that he's had this preseason. People would be screaming even crazier for his name, for him to be lining up with the first team offense. Because if it was Odell Beckham Jr., coaches would have been raving. You know, this is the guy we picked. Blah blah blah. This guy, like, I hear you guys. You keep saying that, you know, he's gonna make the roster. I'm not pleased with just him making the roster. We need to see this guy, like, lining up with the ones, like, because I feel like he can be a big asset to this team lining up with the ones, because, you know, Eli likes those bigger wide receivers. I don't understand why we run around with these short, tiny guys, aside from Victor Cruz, because he's a pure slot receiver. But Gerald Jernigan is a waste of space. I've said this plenty of times, but we need to have I feel like it should be Randall, Cruz, and Corey Washington, and that will give us the best chances to win. And that's it.
Thanks for the call, you.
We got to get away, though, from just the appeal of height. And I know that we've talked a lot about this. There's a number of wide receivers in this league who are small and extremely productive, whether they play in the slot or the outside. Steve Smith, for example, who's now with the Baltimore Ravens, he's a small guy. He plays on the outside and the inside.
Well,
he's been very productive over his career.
It's about how you use it.
Correct.
I mean, look, Dez Bryant's 6'2", right? That's not huge. He's not a big wide receiver, but he plays big. He's got long arms. He goes out there, plucks the ball out of the ball with his big hands. Hakeem Nicks was very similar. He was only a little over 6 foot, barely 6'1", if he was 6'1" at all. But he had long arms. He had big hands. He did a good job fighting for the ball in the air. For example, watching them play, Hakeem Nicks plays a lot more like a big wide receiver than Reuben Randle, even though Reuben Randle is 2 inches taller than him. So it's a matter of how you use your body and how you use your height that determines it. Like, Ramsey Sparta was great. He's 6'6". Didn't know how to use it. Didn't know how to use it.
And Corey Washington knows how to use his body, so, I mean, you can't throw him in as a comparison to Ramsey Sparta.
And I'm not trying to.
But that doesn't mean that just because he has the height department working for him, you all of a sudden throw him in.
You know, John and I were talking on the headset. There was a play down the left sideline that was thrown to Corey Washington. It was the first time in a game situation this past month that I did not see him make the proper play on the ball. And Tom Coughlin was telling us in our production meeting, and this is not talking out of school, he still has to learn the finer points of the game.
Of course.
He's a rookie, okay? And he's making the jump from Division II. Oh, it's no crime that he has a lot to learn.
No, not at all. And that's why I think for people who expect him to come in here and, you know, start, you know, going out there in, you know, week four or week two and line up against Patrick Peterson and catching passes on him, slow your roll a little bit.
Even Victor Cruz, when he came in from UMass, was high-level 1AA.
Right.
And I keep hearing the comparison to Victor Cruz, how he came from Nowhereville and immediately became a productive player. And that's not the case.
By the way, spent his whole first year or
on IR.
Most of his first year on IR. He was on the team the first month, didn't play, and then he got put on IR in October.
He literally didn't make the team the following
year. He was a somewhat seasoned player by the time he blossomed. It is unrealistic for someone to say Corey Washington's going to catch 40 balls and 5 touchdown passes as a rookie with the Giants. It's not going to happen. In fact, I'm telling you, I think he's on the 53. John, I'm not even sure how many games he dresses
for. He gets a shirt. I agree. Right, yeah, I agree. 100%.
I mean, really.
All right. Here's what we do. We're going to put a hold on the phones for now. Let's go through our 53, guys, see where we're different, see where we're the same. I haven't made my practice squad, so I think that's a little far. But
oh, that is far.
I will go through my guys first, and I'll be very quick, all right? I'm not going to waste a lot of people's
time. Why don't you do that, and we will then just comment on guys who we have differently.
Okay, so here's what we're going to do then. We'll go
that
position by
easy.
Position, and I'll let you guys intercede as you go position by position.
If there's anybody different.
I think it's all accurate. We all have two quarterbacks, Manning and Nassau,
yes,
correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay, that's very easy. That's two on offense. And I have my roster split up 25, 25, and 3.
So do I.
So do
you
I.
guys have it the same? All right, that makes it easier too. Now, I will keep 5 running backs, but here's my caveat. Michael Cox will be on the roster as of 4 p.m. on Saturday, but he will not be on the roster by 3 p.m. on Monday. I believe they will go out there and they will find somebody else that can do punts and kicks, punts specifically, to replace Michael Cox on the roster. But I have Jennings, Williams, Hillis, John Connor, and Michael Cox.
I have the same 5, and I think Cox is the guy who is in a little bit of a limbo here. I think that's possible.
I have the same 5 as well. They could go out and get another running back, but I'm not going to say that that's a guarantee.
Well, I'm not sure the guy they replace Cox with is necessarily a running back. That, I think, is the trick. I could see them replacing him with a wide receiver because right now I'm only carrying 5. I have Cruz, Beckham, Randall, Jernigan, and Washington. I think Parker lost his roster spot last night on that muff punt. I think he's on the practice squad.
See, I'm keeping Parker, but I think he's in serious jeopardy of getting wiped out by a waiver claim. And so that would be my take.
And I would lean towards Paul's mindset. I have 6-2 because right now Parker is the only punt returner. And you have to have somebody that at least you could throw out week one. Until Odell Beckham Jr. gets healthy, who else are you turning to? So I think you have to keep him out of necessity right now so that you have somebody that can return punts.
Fair. I think Randall's your emergency, and I think you plan to find the punt returner, and that's where Michael Cox's roster spot goes. Well, obviously, since you guys have 5 backs and 6 wide receivers, we know each of you only have 3 tight ends. I have my 4th, Adrian Robinson.
Right.
But again, I can see Robinson being on the roster on Saturday, not being on the roster on Monday if they can find a better tight end to come in and replace him. I think they'll want to keep 4 tight ends in this offense, just my opinion. Now, the offensive line is tricky, guys. They have some injuries there. They're going to have to carry Jeff Schwartz. We don't know about the injury to Brandon Mosley. I have them carrying 9. I could see even the argument for 10 early in the year, to be honest with you. I have them at 9. You have your 5 starters, Pugh. I'll count Schwartz there. Walton, Richburg, and Beattie. Obviously, Brandon Mosley's on this team. I have John Jerry on this team. I have Alan Reynolds as my eighth guy.
Dallas Reynolds,
I'm sorry. He can play guard and center. And then my ninth guy is Charles Brown. But I will also put the caveat the Giants will look at the waiver wire and try to find a better offensive tackle if they can. And I could see Charles Brown being one of those guys that gets cut loose after the final 53 gets announced on Saturday.
Well, I've got the same nine, John, to be honest with you. And Dallas Reynolds, to me, wound up making my cut when Schwartz got hurt.
Right,
because that created a need for Richburg to move to guard and get him out of that center spot. And so Dallas Reynolds is my backup center.
Absolutely. I have the same exact 9-2. Charles Brown I have on the roster, mainly because you need some backup support for Will Beatty. But with the shoulder injury and the way he played, he is no lock. You were talking about Michael Cox and Preston Parker. If anything, Charles Brown is the first guy that I think leaves town before those other two do, because there's more of an urgency to bring in another tackle.
Especially with that shoulder injury. All right, so those are our 25. We differ on the Cox, Parker, Adrian Robinson. Those are the three guys that seem to be in limbo for the three of us. And by the way, just for a couple offensive guys, Lance, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, this just goes to show you how difficult these decisions are, because four tight ends impacts how many wide receivers you keep. You keep six wide receivers, you only keep three tight ends. So it's really a numbers game.
And in terms of the practice squad, really quickly, offensive players that I think can get on the practice squad, I think Gaskins has a decent shot at being a practice squad guy. And frankly, there aren't a ton of offensive guys. I could see them bringing back Jerome Cunningham and having him be a tight end on the practice squad.
Possibly.
I think they like his athleticism. I think he's got a shot. And I think the offensive lineman Gaines, the tackle, could be a guy they could put on the practice squad.
I have him down as well. As
and I would have put Herman on the practice squad, but he's going to be on the suspension list, so obviously he's not there right now. They'll have to go out and find the guard or slash center to put on that practice squad to add a depth. I think you need two offensive linemen on that practice squad, Paul.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. I think Talley also has an outside shot on offense.
See, I have Parker as my practice squad wide receiver, which is why I don't have Talley.
But Parker's got 3 years of veteran experience with the Bucs. I don't think you can do that.
Has he played in 32 games?
If
he hasn't played in 32 games, he will be eligible under the rules.
Well, we're going to have to look that one up. But
you know what? If Parker can't get on the practice squad, maybe I would make a change, put him on my active, and then Talley would be on my practice squad.
Of course, the real crazy part about even doing that, John, I admire your gumption to try to put a practice squad together, but you got to remember, there are hundreds of guys who are going to get cut across this league, and probably, as much as we've seen Talley do some nice things in practice,
there might be somebody better out there.
Probably.
That's fair.
Well, I would also make the argument, if Parker gets waived, he probably gets claimed too.
Maybe. Maybe,
well, I mean,
not.
Given his special teams value, I think somebody would give him consideration.
Remember, every other NFL team saw him fumble that punt, too.
Iffy. I mean, he didn't have a lot of guys knocking his doors down when he was on the street last year, either.
All right. If you guys want to call and start giving us your 53s, we'll start screening you. 201-939-4513. Let's go through the defense here,
guys. It's already quarter to 11. Wow.
So if you want to squeeze in a couple, we can. If you don't, that's fine, too.
Here's you going to have time for a power walk?
Here's my defense.
I'm worried about you here.
I got 10 defensive linemen, 5 defensive ends, and 5 defensive tackles. Now, Paul, I got to admit, you've convinced me on something, and I'll get to that in a second. My 5 defensive ends are the 4 guys that are going to play a lot: Demontre Moore, Jason Pierre-Paul, Kiwanuka, Robert Ayers, and Israel Adonijé. Do you guys have all 5 of those guys on your rosters as well?
Well, are we putting Kiwanuka in there, too?
Yeah.
Did you mention
that?
Okay,
Moore,
I didn't know if you're
JPP, Kiwi, Ayers, and Adonijé.
Yeah.
Those are my 5.
Yep.
Do you have Adonijé on your roster?
I have Adonijé definitely on my roster, yeah.
I have 5 defensive tackles, Jenkins, Hankins, Patterson, Bromley. And after a lot of deep thought, Paul, I'm putting Quarles in ahead of Kuhn.
Yeah, I think you have to, because Marcus Kuhn's ankle injury just sabotaged him.
And here's the way I look at it, too. I think at this point, based on what Quarles has put on tape, I think there's a better chance you sneak Kuhn to the practice squad than Quarles. So I think that's why you put Quarles on the active roster, you put Kuhn's on the practice squad, which he can go now because of the new eligibility rules.
Correct. He hasn't played nearly as many games that would make him ineligible. I actually have Marcus Kuhn on the roster, and I'm putting Quarles on the practice squad. I was very torn with this decision, but I think Kuhn still has upside. I know he hasn't had a very good preseason, but I think the coaching staff is fond of him. And I think Quarles, although he's had some positives, I mean, I can't forget some of the mental errors, the penalties, and you know, how much of an impact is he really going to have, even if you put him on the 53? He's probably never going to dress. Let's face it.
Well,
I think Kuhn has a better chance to dress.
The only thing about Marcus Kuhn that's troublesome is that we don't know how bad that ankle injury is. And quite honestly, if you're going to put him on the 53, you have to be sure he's going to be able to contribute right away.
And like Kanoski, by the way, can Kuhn stay healthy?
Yeah, that's an issue too. I'm sorry. Look, I'm a big Marcus Kuhn guy. I've been promoting him all along. But that ankle injury, I'm sorry. I mean, I just, no.
Yeah, he hasn't even been out on the side of practice.
No.
Working.
No.
Like, he's disappeared.
That's my point. No, I don't know how bad it is.
I agree. That's fair. But we'll see. It all depends on how serious the ankle is. Nobody knows. Linebackers, and I think we're going to have some differences here. I only have five linebackers on this roster. I finally decide to let go of Mark Herzlich. I think the other linemen, safeties, and corners that you have in this roster can fill that special teams void. I think Devon Kennard is going to be an excellent special teams player. He could pick up for Herzlich there. So Beeson obviously coming off of PUP, along with McLean, Jaquan, Spencer Paysinger, and Devon Kennard. Those are my five.
I went six. I'm keeping Herzlich because I think the Giants special teams unit needs him, and so he skates another season.
I'm in your boat. I have six, too. I think Herzlich does find a way to stay on this team, though he's now dealing with a shoulder injury. I don't know how serious that is. Does that all of a sudden enter the conversation?
He did not seem to be concerned at all, not last night nor the day before when we talked to him out at the patio. So I'm going to go Herzlich.
I have six corners. Prince, Dominique Rogers-Cromartie, Walter Thurman, Jermaine McBride. Bennett Jackson's my last corner on the roster with a very close competition with Chandler Fenner, who I have on the practice squad. And then you have Zach Bowman.
My six also.
I'm making sure I counted right. I have six, too. For some reason, I put five in parentheses.
Well, so hold on a second. Then you guys, do you have four safeties?
Four safeties. Brown, Wool, Dimps, and Barry.
Then you have one too many defensive players.
Nine, I have three safeties.
9, 6, 6, 4. That's 25.
You have 10 defensive linemen, you said.
Oh, I do have 10. I miscounted.
You have to cut somebody off your roster, Paul DiTino. Lance, you only
I have
three
safeties. Yeah.
So what, you don't have Burhey on the roster?
I have him on the practice squad.
Wow, you try to sneak him onto the squad, huh?
Yep.
That's risky business. See, that's why I left Herzlich off, because I don't want to let one of these defensive linemen or safeties go. I don't want to risk losing them. That's why Mark Herzlich doesn't make my roster.
Well, but has Burhey, using Quarles as an example, has Burhey flashed enough in the preseason where he's easily going to get claimed?
I think as a fifth-round pick, I think he gets claimed. And I think he'll give you enough on special teams where he will get a shirt every game day. I think he will be dressed every day for special teams. And I just blew Paul DiTino's mind.
I added wrong.
Mel Math has never been your strong suit.
And yeah, they kept three safeties last year, let's not forget.
All right, Paul. I'm going to chat with Lance here for a minute. You ponder, and I want to get your final cut on defense or offense before we say goodbye, okay?
Yeah. You know what? Quarles is going practice.
Wow, you're keeping it. See, wow, you keep Herzlich over Quarles.
I need the special teams. I need it.
Well, I don't think that's crazy. And usually, I'll side with you over Paul, John. But I think Herzlich's special teams value. You definitely take him.
He's
over
one of
Quarles.
The best
Come
three
on.
Special teams guys on this team.
I mean, I don't even. I think that's a no-brainer.
I think you get enough from the young guys like Kennard and Burhey where you make up for Herzlich's loss. That's my thought.
I hope so, but I don't know.
I have trouble keeping a guy on the roster that, you know, quite frankly, guys, right now, I could call Mark Herzlich their fourth string middle linebacker.
I'm not arguing that.
He would be behind Beeson, McLean, and Kennard.
I cannot argue that. But here's a guy who understands the value of special teams, obviously, because it's his lifeblood to stay in this league. Has the maturity and the leadership skills on special teams to be, you know, what you need him to be. And that is a guy, one of your leaders out there. I mean, how do I know that those other fellows, those young guys, are gonna just bust their butts every time down the field for 16 weeks? I've seen Herzlich do it.
But here's the thing. In my opinion, by next year, Kelsey Crawls can be a rotational defensive tackle. Mike Pattis is no longer on the team. When Colin Jenkins is a year older,
I know.
And I think he could be a guy that gives you good 20 to 30 snaps a game. I know Herzlich's not going to be that guy.
You're right. So this comes down to, A, do you think you can get Quarles through? And if you don't think so, then you got to keep him.
And by the way, I don't like cutting Herzlich. He's a great guy. He's a good football player. He's a good teammate. He's a very good special teamer. It gives me no joy to say let him go. I'd love to have him on my roster. I just think Quarles is too much talent. I don't want to lose him.
I'm with you on that. I don't dispute your evaluation of him in any way, shape, or form. But I need to know, if I'm Tom Quinn, I need to know, who am I going to be able to throw out there who's going to bust his butt and give me 16 weeks of hustle? I just don't know that I have enough of guys on that roster that are going to do that for me. And, John, special teams is a third of the game. I mean, Herzlick is going to be out
I'll
there.
Argue that, by
what?
The way. I don't believe special teams is as important as offense.
Right, but between
maybe
kickoff,
a sixth of the game.
Between kickoff and punt coverage, how many times is, Sunday is Herzlick going to be out on the field where he can make a play? You know, that's enough times.
Hey, look, you're thinking long term. Hey, look, to cut you off. He's thinking short term as well as I am.
100%. And I'm not, and just like you're not trying to downplay my evaluation of Quarles, I'm not trying to downplay Herzlick's contributions on special teams. You're right. He's a top special teamer on this team. He's on all the teams. He's on punt protection. He's on field goal block.
I'll make it easy
he's
for
on
you.
Kickoff
cut
coverage.
Your fourth tight end.
That's true. That's a good argument. There you go.
Well, remember, I'm not making my 53. I'm making the 53. I think the Giants.
Oh, see, we're on different pages then because I'm giving you my 53.
Oh, so why do you have Jernigan on the team?
I don't have Jernigan on the team.
You didn't
I'm cutting Jernigan.
You didn't tell me that you cut Jernigan.
Who was your
wide receiver?
Sixth? Yeah,
Jernigan.
I thought he was your sixth.
No. I had Marcus Harris. I'd be cheating if I took him off now.
Yeah, Harris
is on IR. I know, but I had him on my 53.
No, I don't care. And so that's easy. So then leave Quarles on and get rid of Marcus Harris. So, he's on IR.
So what I did was I wrote down Jernigan here as a parenthesis because I'm cutting him as soon as the waiver claim comes out.
Oh, so you now you have Jernigan in place of Harris on your 53.
Well, he's holding the body.
No, I understand.
But he's not okay. On my team.
If I was making my 53, yeah, I wouldn't have Adrian Ramos on the team and I keep Herzlick. That's easy.
Oh, okay. Well, see, that it's a totally different question.
I'm just
question.
Telling you what I think is going to happen.
Well, I didn't think that's what you were asking me.
Oh, I'm sorry,
when you said
no.
My 53, I thought you
listen,
meant the ones
John
I wanted.
John has a tendency to change the rules.
You no, come
did you
on,
think
that's
it's
not
like
true.
When he puts the rundown
did you think
together.
It was your 53 or Jerry's?
I thought it was my 53.
So did I. I thought it was my 53.
I speak for myself. I don't speak for Jerry.
Right.
So that okay, so then we're in agreement. I then keep Herzlick on the team, and I'll get rid of Adrian Robinson.
Okay. That's fine.
There you go. We've come to an agreement. We like that.
On tomorrow's edition, we'll give you Tom Coughlin's 53.
And Jerry Reese's 53.
Jerry Reese's 53.
And just
by the way, stay tuned.
The only 53 that actually matters, by the way.
Correct.
And just for the heck of it, let's get Ernie Ucorsi's 53.
Absolutely. Too. Listen, we'll throw a whole party. The gang is back together.
All right, everybody. Great job on the phones today. We'll see how correct we are. We'll make fun of ourselves on Monday, on Labor Day. We will have a show. We'll hear from the players on Monday. We'll head to the locker room later on today to talk to the players about final cuts and that's about it. It's been a busy week. It's been a hell of a training camp and a hell of a preseason, guys. But guess what? The real stuff starts next week. None of this lackadaisical stuff out of you, Meadow. Paul,
see, I would have thought that would have been a Paul reaction.
I want you to start getting the enthusiasm up. I want you to start getting some energy. You've been very flat the last 4 weeks.
Oh, indeed.
I need you to start flying, all right? So this week I need you to dip
flying,
yourself in your
flying.
Tanning vat. You can get nice and tan for next
flying,
week
huh?
And get ready to go. I want you power walking in Detroit at 85 miles an hour next Monday
I
night.
I think I may have to if you've been to Detroit any time in the last couple of years.
Oh, boy. I just wanted to clarify the Preston Parker debate as to whether
or not he
can get on the practice squad. Okay, so here is the exact language of the rule. There are two players that you can retain on the practice squad that have tallied at most 32 games, but it has to come over their first two seasons in the league. Parker has had three seasons, 27 games. So the fact that it's not over the first two seasons
and
he's passed.
And did some of those games come in his third year? That would be the question.
He had his numbers, 9 games in 2010, 16 and 11, 2 in 2012.
Yeah, I don't believe he would then be eligible.
So I do not think that he is eligible. And I don't think Marcus Kuhn is eligible either because Kuhn is already now into more than 2 years.
This would be his third year. So he only has 2 years of accrued experience in regular season games. So he would.
So he actually may make it.
Yeah, he had the IR in there, which is a big deal.
So you know what? If I can't put Parker on my practice squad, then I'm letting go of Michael Cox and I'm putting Parker on my 53.
So now you're down to a total of 4 backs then.
That's
am I correct?
Correct? That's
3
correct.
Running backs, 1 fullback.
That's correct. But I think, much like Paul said, Parker's the guy that could be out of here come Monday if you find somebody better.
Okay.
There you go. We were much more on the same page than I thought we were. I thought we had some spirited debates.
I mean, it's John, we've all looked at this team enough of times to have a clue now. It's unfortunate in one regard because I really would like to believe that some of these decisions would have been easier. But like the tight end position, it's just not very easy.
It just clicked with you. Do you know why Paul got so upset about that end of DC call? She tried to have him kicked out of the locker room. She wanted the media out of the locker room.
That's a touchy
subject.
You don't
take Paul out of the Giants.
Are you kidding me? He chases down players. You don't chase him out of there.
Since you are the producer, at what point do we kick her off this program?
No, Ann was temporarily banned
the
summer for some inappropriate comments.
Okay.
But enough months passed. We gave her another chance. She said two very civilized calls. So
today was civilized. Well, she was very polite.
Was extremely civilized.
She was very polite. Yes. She was very polite.
I'm not going to ban anybody for content. I'll ban somebody for being rude or mean. Everyone can have their opinion.
Absolutely.
And then I can get reactions like that from you. I should tell a story from last night, by the way, before I say goodbye. So we're doing the interviews in the locker room, and I'm trying to think of who I was talking to at that point. I believe I was talking to Victor Cruz, and I was about to throw up the lens and wrap up the posting show from the locker room. And all I hear, and how this works in the locker room, folks, on our radio broadcast, is that Paul and I can hear each other off the air in our headsets. So as I finish the Cruz interview, and I'm about to throw it back upstairs to Lance to finish off the postgame show, all I hear Paul scream in my headset, "Mike Patterson! Mike Patterson! I'm going to get Mike Patterson!" I turn around, and all I see is this tan blur flying past me in the locker room with the mic in one hand and his work bag in the other, wearing a headset, flying. Almost knocks Jenny Ventress over, flies through the locker room, and gets Mike Patterson for our final interview of the postgame show. It was about five people just watched you go in awe at how fast and how quickly you managed to get Mike Patterson.
Now, what was Patterson's reaction?
Show.
How excited was he that he made the postgame show? That's
First
what I'd
of
love
all,
to know.
He was very gracious. He was half-dressed, but very gracious, and said he clocked me at 4-2.
Really?
Well, the bright side,
that
Paul
is
ran over so quickly, he actually helped him dry him off after the shower by creating a wind current around him.
See, look at the benefits that Paul DeTino provides. The other thing is Corey Washington, it must be so high on you. I mean, you have looked to highlight him on every single show as well.
Well, it's very hard not to. I mean, look what he's done. Although, last night, he didn't get on a postgame because he didn't have any catches.
Well, that's because they didn't throw a deep pass to him in the last 2 minutes. They should have. It might have worked. Let's be honest.
Yeah, the way it was going. Somebody had to break that streak.
I know. But all the Giants figure, you know what, let's just kick the field goal and get the hell out of here before we play in overtime.
Oh, I was nervous about overtime.
And I think we're all pretty happy that happened.
Yes.
We had our overtime last year.
Even Paul was passing up free football in the fifth preseason game, and that says something.
I figured it was time to get to the rosters.
Everybody.
I would agree.
Great job. We'll see how bad our 53s are. Maybe they're going to be good. Maybe they'll be bad. We'll see. We'll be with you on Monday morning on Labor Day. Everyone have a great holiday weekend, and we'll see you on Monday.